This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for making us a part of your weekend, particularly on this Father's Day. We are trying to connect to Joe Klein, who's the political columnist for Time Magazine, to talk a little bit about more developments in the NSA spying story. Oh, good. Joe's on the line. Let me give you a little background on the developments as we know them today. Facebook and Microsoft have made deals with the government about what kind of information they can release about what the NSA has gotten from them. Facebook says that they have received between 9 and 10,000 requests from the U.S. government for data, that just in the second half of last year, covering between 18 and 19,000 user accounts. So I'm guessing that each request must have been for a couple of accounts on average. That's a small percentage of the hundreds of millions of people who have Facebook accounts. Microsoft says that they got 31,000 requests in the second half of last year. They say not all of that was national security related. Some of that was just requests involving average everyday crimes, something like 24,000 of those for all of 2012. Google says they're still negotiating with the government. Twitter says that they are still not participating in the PRISM program run by the NSA. But the information we're getting, at least from these companies, is in a direct contradiction to what The Guardian and The Washington Post had reported about the government and the NSA having direct access to their servers. Joe Klein is the political columnist for Time Magazine, has been writing about this in a column this week called The Civil Liberties Freakout. Joe, welcome to America Weekend.
Good to be here.
What do you think of these new developments in the PRISM story?
Well, I'm not at all surprised by it. I mean, you know, I have been familiar with the PRISM program for about 7 or 8 years now, and it seemed to me from the start to be a reasonable measure to take to prevent us from future terrorist attacks. I know the people like Michael Hayden, who developed it when he was at NSA. I think that they're real solid, decent people. And, you know, I'm not one of those people who sees the United States government as a vast conspiracy, you know, conducted against the American people.
Okay, but don't we also have to find out where that balance is by knowing what
Absolutely.
The government...
Absolutely. I think that we can't, you know, there is a balance, but it's going to always be a frustrating one for us because, you know, secrets are secrets. And if you're tracing down, you know, the 9/11, you know, terrorists, you don't want to have the public know in advance that we're tracing down these guys who were thinking about driving planes into the World Trade Center. What you need to do is give it time to let their plot develop. And so, you know, I think that the most interesting thing about this whole non-scandal is that we knew about this, you know, 3 years ago. We had the debate, you know, when the Patriot Act was revised, and these measures came under the FISA court. You know, they have to if they're going to do anything more than just check for patterns of phone calls, then they have to go to the FISA court to get a warrant. And so, you know, the way it stands now, I haven't heard of a single case of an unwarranted assault on an individual's privacy. What we have heard is that there have been a dozen at least terrorist plots that have been foiled.
One of the problems that I see in this, Joe, though, is you know as well as I do that a good prosecutor can lead a grand jury to indictment any way he wants to. And when you look at the FISA court and all of these things that are done in secret, and I grant you that some of it has to be done in secret, but this FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, they've never turned down a request by the government to go in there and use warrants or all the rest. They've never said no. Isn't that effectively not a court but a rubber stamp?
Well, you know, you could look at it that way, or if you actually believe in our government, you could say that our government has been very prudent in going to the FISA court for requests. I mean, you know, it just depends. One thing that the most dangerous tendency in our country right now, I think, are people who think that the government is some kind of alien entity that is directed against them. It's just not. In fact, when you compare our government to the other industrialized countries of the world and the regulations that they put on their business activity, on hiring and firing and so on and so forth, this is a very libertarian country. It always has been. I am not afraid of, you know, the government overreaching in this area, because if it does, if we start getting evidence that people are being arrested or locked up or knocked off without cause, then I think that there is going to be a massive rebellion, because this is America.
All right, let me read you something that was written by a professor, law professor at George Washington University named Daniel Solove, who says that secrecy at the level of an individual suspect is different from keeping the very existence of massive surveillance programs secret. The public must know about the general outlines of surveillance activities in order to evaluate whether the government is achieving the appropriate balance between privacy and security. He asks, what kind of information is gathered? How is it used? How securely is it kept? What kind of oversight is there? Are these activities even legal? These questions can't be answered, he says, and the government can't be held accountable if surveillance programs are completely classified. How do you react to that?
Well, I react to that by saying clearly this is a guy who hasn't followed the debate, because, you know, we have had the debate in the open. We do know there is nothing, there has been nothing released in the last 2 or 3 weeks that came as a surprise to me, because I covered the debate in 2011. I knew that the PRISM program was completely legal. I knew the extent of it. I suspect that I'm sure that given what I do, I travel to the region a lot. I talk to all sides there. You know, I've been to Iran several times. I am sure that they have, you know, that my number has popped up or my emails have popped up in their dragnet. But I'm not, you know, I'm happy about that. Because, you know, that means that the thing is working, because I am talking to people who are opponents of the United States.
All right, speaking of the region, meaning the Middle East, the Obama administration now says that we're going to arm the rebels, or at least we're going to help them out with arms and ammunition, not boots on the ground. Do you think we should be getting involved in this?
No, I don't. Not in that way. I do think that there are things that we can and should be doing and have been doing. I think the Obama position has been the correct one. But what we're dealing with, if I could just step back a little bit, is a part of the world where the country borders were drawn in 1916 by a bunch of Europeans. It was called the Sykes-Picot Treaty. And anytime you see a straight line in that region, you know that it wasn't drawn by someone who actually lived there. It was drawn by a European. And it was inevitable that at some point they would reach the level of sophistication and information that they were going to try and sort out the real borders for themselves. For example, I'm not sure that there's such a place as Jordan, but I know that there is a Kurdistan, because there are Kurds. And what we're getting ourselves into here is a sorting out that's going to take place over the next 20 to 30 years. It's going to be violent. It's going to be ugly. And we're not, you know, we have a pretty terrible track record of choosing sides over there.
Horrible.
You know, what?
Horrible record. We've never gotten it right.
Never. And so now we're doing the exact same thing that we did in the 70s when the Russians invaded Afghanistan. We're backing the rebels, and the rebels in that case turned out to be Al-Qaeda.
Yep.
And in this case, they're going to turn out to be Al-Qaeda as well. So, I mean, neither side is anything to write home about. I mean, the Assad government and, you know, and I think that the thing that really pushed Obama over the edge wasn't the chemical weapons, but it was the fact that Hezbollah had come in on the side of Assad in a big way, and they're very, very good fighters.
Yeah, anytime we go in there and take the attitude of, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, we should exactly go back to, you know, Charlie Wilson's war.
Just right. Right. And you know, in that part of the world, the enemy of my enemy is my enemy.
That's exactly right. Joe, it's always a pleasure. Have a very happy Father's Day.
Thank you so much.
Joe Klein, political columnist for Time magazine. Speaking of Father's Day, they have a collection in on the Time website of letters from dads. And Joe writes to his daughter, very, very nice piece. You can check that out as well. And his most recent book, Politics Lost. I'm Paul Harris. This show is called America Weekend, every Saturday and Sunday from the Envision Radio Networks. America.